Welcome to the Alcohol Free Life podcast, brought to you by thesoberclub.com. I'm Genuinely Grace. This is for you if you've quit the booze or you'd like to, or maybe you're just sober curious. I'll bring you tips and motivation without any judgment, and there'll be inspiration from experts, quitlet authors, and sober heroes. Hi and welcome to the podcast. It's Genuinely Grace. I hope you're well. And I had an amazing response to the podcast with Jason Vale last week. I thought that would really get a lot of you going, because it's just so, his energy and his enthusiasm is just so fabulously infectious. And it's exactly what we need right now, is that kind of optimism. So that was great. And if you haven't had a listen yet to that one, then go back and check out the podcast with Jason Vale. Check out all the podcasts, because it's had, you know, so many great guests, and people often say that they're working through them one at a time. That's quite a lot now. Anyways, in the Sober Club, we are going to be doing a juice shot challenge in honour of Jason. So that starts next week. If you want to join us, you're very welcome. It's great for people new to juicing, as well as people who are, you know, very used to doing it, because you can just kind of start gently mixing bits and bobs together. So anyways, whatever stage you're at, pop those juices into your life somehow. I also wanted to remind you that we've got our event online, obviously, next Tuesday, which is Bossing Your Sober Christmas, or Bossing Your Christmas Sober, whichever way you want to look at it. And it's really for people who want to feel positive this festive season. I mean, who doesn't? Let's finish 2020 strong, right? It's been one heck of a year. And the issue with Christmas can often be that it can bring up all these kind of weird emotions, and suddenly something can hit you out of the blue. Because it's a way that you always did things. You know, if you put the tree up and you always had a certain drink in your hand, or when you opened the presents, you were always drinking a brandy or whatever ridiculous traditions we all used to have. They can kind of come up and hit you suddenly. So it's fantastic to be prepared. So we're going to do a coaching session on Tuesday evening, UK time. I'm going to be talking about all of this stuff, and obviously what we can drink and how we can prep and how we can set boundaries. But I'm also going to do some NLP techniques, neuro-linguistic programming. I'm trained as a practitioner, and it's just a great thing to do to throw in a bit of positivity. So that's going to be really fun. It is only for Sober Club members. So do join us. You can always leave, obviously. Leave at any time. Join us if you want to attend that event. I was going to make it a ticketed event and do it for everyone, but then I figured I wanted to keep it, you know, relatively small. But anyway, drop me an email if that's something that you're interested in. It's this Tuesday, 8th of December, Bossing Your Christmas Sober. And as I say, we will, of course, be looking at what we're going to be drinking. You know, that's going to be really, really, really a big part of this, certainly at Christmas time. And to that end, super excited that we've teamed up this week for the podcast with Sea Arch Drinks. I mean, I've told you about this brand before. I just love them. And often, you know, when people are new to ditching the booze, this is the gift, you know, that I'll hand over, because when you're at those early stages and you're thinking, I'll never be able to have a nice drink ever again, I'm stuck with Coke and orange juice, you really are not. So let me tell you a little bit about Sea Arch Drinks. The founders are Sarah and Jeff Yates. They're the creators. And it is, of course, a distilled non-alcoholic spirit. And they've been inspired by the Devon Coast. They are so lucky. They live in the most beautiful, beautiful area. And this has inspired the brand from the stunning, absolutely stunning marine blue bottle to the refreshing taste, really. They use traditional distillation techniques, and they capture the best of these 11 botanicals for their coastal juniper blend. And it includes sea kelp and samphire, which, of course, is native to the Devon coast where they live. Also juniper, blood orange and cardamom coriander. Just about managed to say that properly. And what's interesting about Sarah and Jeff is that they used to own a wine bar. So they've come from, you know, a different background. But they found that customers, you know, over the years were wanting alternatives. They were wanting healthier options, and they didn't always want alcohol. You know, they wanted to drive home, for starters. So they thought, OK, let's have a go. Let's make our own non-alcoholic spirit. And they did loads of experimentation. Jeff used his experience as a chef, because he used to work with combining flavours, and they really wanted this to be a healthy alternative. So it's really important to note that it's sugar-free, it's got no sweeteners, no allergens, and it is made with all natural ingredients. But also how you serve it is really important. And I think this is critical as well. When we kind of stop drinking, we think, oh, it'll be OK just to have, you know, a bit of apple juice in a crappy plastic glass. It so won't. This is where Sarah comes in, because when she was thinking about the brand, she was thinking, hold on, I used to work in high end bars and restaurants. And, you know, it's really important that we have beautiful presentation. And so she suggests that you serve their signature C&T in lovely glassware. I would always recommend that, with really good quality ice and maybe a twist of citrus. You know, always good to pimp your drink with premium tonic. And then maybe you can add a little sprig of fresh samphire or another herb. That's a lovely little idea. I love that. And of course, Sea Arch works brilliantly too in if you want to make a cocktail, an alcohol-free cocktail. And they have lots of recipes for really nice cocktails. Now, they've got this new gift pack available, which is just great. They've teamed up with Double Dutch Tonics. So what you get is a pack comprising of a bottle of Coastal Juniper plus 250ml cans of Double Dutch Skinny Tonic that complements the Sea Arch really, really well. And it's all wrapped up in biodegradable cellophane with a gift tag and a jute bow. And it's presented in a recyclable box. So that is just a beautiful gift and ticks the kind of eco box as well. And Sarah and Jeff are also really excited, so am I, about the new addition to the Sea Arch family, because they've got these ready-to-drink single-serve C&T, as they're calling it, in a can. Now, I don't know about you, but I've looked at some of these alternatives before, where you want to buy something pre-mixed, perhaps if you're travelling or whatever. And a lot of them contain artificial sweeteners, which I absolutely don't want. So this is just absolutely amazing. So you get all the deliciousness of a G&T, obviously without the alcohol. And as their strapline says, it's more beautiful without. I just love that. So they've got these little cans. It's Sea Arch and tonic. It can just be snapped open and enjoyed on the go. So that's it. And two flavours now. So they've got the Coastal Juniper blend with a twist, and a lightly sparkling Indian tonic, and then the Rose C&T, which is the Coastal Juniper blend with a light raspberry and rose infused tonic. Again, really pretty packaging, even on the cans. They look really nice. By the way, you can buy your Sea Arch from Ocado, Amazon, the Wise Bartender, of course, and obviously you can go direct to Sea Arch, which is searchdrinks.com. And also, we have got a great competition to win some Sea Arch. So if you go to thesoberclub.com and scroll for the blog post there, you can win, have a go at winning some. And also, if you check the show notes, I'll make sure I've got info about it there. So thank you to Sea Arch. We absolutely love your drinks. It makes so much difference. I haven't even told you my guest is today either. I thought I'd interview a Sober Club member today. John Drage has been a member for ages, probably, I don't know, 8-9 months or something like that. And it's just been great watching his transformation, really. There's no other word for it. And I thought it'd be great if John wanted to share his story. And we've also got a real treat because we've got a little clip of John's music, because he's also a musician. So enjoy the podcast. I love it when we get to hear success stories, and it's just brilliant to be able to chat to John Drage, who is a Sober Club member. And John, you posted something in our group a while ago. I think you were, was it six, how many days sober were you? How many months, years?
That was my 500th.
500, day. That's right, yeah. That's right. Your 500th day, yeah. And it was just such a lovely inspirational post, and loads of people said, oh my God, I love this story. So I thought it would be great for you to just share it with us, and just, you know, I think it's just always interesting to hear how different people navigate the various different kind of hills of sobriety, if you like. And I know that when I don't know how many months ago, but I know that you were, you know, it's not all been absolutely plain sailing for you. I know there's been times when you've done things like job interviews and stuff, and I remember you posting and people kind of cheering you on. So take us back then to your drinking days first. Tell us a little bit about what was going on then.
Yes, so I grew up in a family really where drinking was a massive thing. Both my parents were big drinkers. All their friends, family, all big drinkers. So from a very early age, drinking was very much the norm for me, seeing it, experiencing the pitfalls of it. So it's been there all my life. But I think when it really ramped up was for me. I mean, I started drinking when I was probably about 15 with my dad, down the pub, just the odd half a lager here and there. But where it really ramped up for me was when I was probably about 17 and my parents took over a pub. So I ended up living in a pub with all this alcohol. It just sort of snowballed from there. I was, drinking every night, probably 4 or 5 pints every night, and then getting used to that. And then the tolerance just goes up and up and up. And before you know it, you're in a situation where you're drinking, I don't know, 8, 9, 10 pints every day. And that's how it got to that level, before I sort of stopped. Coupled with that, I actually had my own pub as well. So I had a pub for 3 years. And while I was there, I was drinking copious amounts of drink, but it just didn't seem to affect me. Just the tolerance was so high. But obviously, physically and mentally, it was affecting me.
When did you first sort of start to realize, oh, hold on, this is not right. I'm not enjoying this anymore. This is not meant to be.
So I think I always sort of knew it was there. I knew it was an issue. I knew my drinking wasn't normal, so to say. My partner at the time used to point out the fact that it wasn't normal. But because I'd grown up with a family full of drinkers, I just didn't think my drinking was any different to anybody else's, really. But it was a number of things that got me to the point where I said enough's enough. My children were getting to the age 9 and 10 years old where they were noticing stuff. They were asking questions. And I started to hide my drinking from the children, which sounds really silly, but I didn't want them to see drinking as a normal thing to do. And I was sort of asking my question, why I'm hiding this from my children, yet I won't accept that I've got an issue myself. So there was that. Then there was the fact that I was 25 stone, so unhealthy. I'd had no energy. I was in, a lot of debt. And I'd go through my bank statement every month and fail to see that I'd spent £800 in the pub that month.
I know, we forget, don't we? We don't count that money. It's bizarre how we don't count that money. I used to think exactly the same.
And I always used to say to myself, well, that's quite acceptable because I don't drink at home. And I'm thinking, well, no wonder you don't drink at home because you're always at the pub drinking. So it was just, a number of things that got to the point. But the turning point was I was at the pub one evening. I remember it so clearly. It was July 3rd, 2019. It was 11:30 at night, and I stood there with my last inch of cider, just about to go home, and I just caught a glimpse of my future, really. I looked around, and I saw people slumped in their chairs. I saw the over-emotional arguments. I just saw the old withered, drunken faces, and I thought, do you know what? I can't do this anymore. I've got to stop. And just as like in anything else in my life, when I make a decision, I just make a decision and go with it, and then think about the consequences afterwards. And I took that decision that night. I said to the landlord, "That's it, finished. No more drink for me." And nobody believed me. And that was it. That was the last time I drank.
Wow. So how did you know, there's going to be people immediately thinking, oh my goodness, I wish I could just make the decision and stop. What did you sort of have on hand to help you navigate those early weeks then? What kept that strength? Because, we all know that it's one thing making a decision and it's fantastic when you can, but willpower alone doesn't really work, does it? Because
No, it doesn't.
usually with willpower alone, you do start, the complacency starts to come in at some point.
Yeah, no, definitely. I always tell people about willpower. Willpower is very finite. It lasts a certain amount of time. It might get you through the first couple of weeks, but you need something more than that. And What I did was I did take some hypnotherapy.
Right.
So I sought out some hypnotherapy, and that really worked for me. I mean, I don't understand how it works. I'm not even going to try and understand how it works, but it was a way that I could take myself off and just be completely relaxed. The person I went to the hypnotherapy, he gave me tapes as well. So the hypnotherapy I had in person, I could then do at home.
Yeah.
And I've since found loads of resources online, and you've got some on your website for hypnotherapy. And even now, not so much for the drinking, but sometimes just when I'm stressed out, I just go and lie on my bed and play some hypnotherapy tapes or something, just to relax, concentrate on your breathing. And I did that a lot in the first 6 months of my sobriety. But I really do believe the key to my sobriety has been the knowledge I've gained from so many different sources, whether it be podcasts, YouTube videos, reading books, just really understanding what is going on with alcohol when you drink it. And then when it happens, when you get them cravings, you can acknowledge it, and you can deal with it at the time. And I mean, I don't get the cravings anymore, but it's just acknowledge, just sit with the feelings and deal with them, and know that it's just a thought. It's not anything that's going to make you start drinking again. And that's
I
why
mean,
it
it's so
works.
true. It's like, you're right that for somebody like you, who for all those years has been steeped in the world of alcohol, I mean, most of us are, of course, but for you, it was your norm, wasn't it? And in every way. And you're right, when you really sort of immerse yourself in that knowledge, in that logic, so that the logical part of your brain, when a craving comes in, the logical part of your brain will remind you of all the reasons why alcohol is so bad for you. But also, I know what you did is, as you say, listen to podcasts, and you've got hypnosis audios and stuff that's inspirational as well. So it's not just the logic, I must not drink because alcohol is bad. It's also that fabulous inspiration of, wow, my life's getting better all the time.
Yeah, that's it. And it does get so much easier when you start to see the benefits of stopping drinking. And that is when, like I say, with the willpower lasts for so little time, but it probably just gets you started. But when you start seeing the benefits, you start changing the mindset, and you start thinking, actually, I don't want to drink, but actually, I like feeling like this. So it's a complete switch.
Tell us about the benefits for you then. I know you lost
Oh,
some weight for
yeah,
starters.
the benefits have been unbelievable. I mean, I can't believe how much my life has changed since 504 days ago now. So yeah, I mean, I've lost about 7.5 stone in
Wow,
weight.
that is unbelievable. Have you massively changed your diet as well?
No.
Wow,
No, not
that's
really.
unbelievable.
No,
God, that really shows you the empty calories in the booze, doesn't it? Oh my
it's
God, that's amazing, John.
I mean, what I did do, say I haven't changed my diet. When I used to drink, get drunk,
Then
go
eat a
home,
load of old shite.
and eat rubbish. And obviously I don't do that anymore. So the empty calories is one thing you get from alcohol, but it's the calories you gain from just being carb crazy
Getting the
afterwards.
munchies, yeah.
And so all that stopped. I mean, I really do enjoy my food, and I eat tons of rubbish, and I still eat rubbish now. But I think I've just found my natural weight without alcohol.
Amazing. God, that must have made such a difference to how you feel. Incredible.
Definitely, definitely. So, I mean, that has massive health implications. I am asthmatic as well, so all of that's got a million times better. I'm walking, I'm running.
Oh wow. Were you doing that before, or was that difficult for you because of your weight?
No, I couldn't barely move. My knees have had it and everything at that weight.
Wow.
So yeah, everything like that's got better. But financially,
Oh yeah, you did a post about how much money you'd saved.
so yeah, it was around, so £800 a month, probably saving
Wow.
in drinking.
God, that's
But
brilliant.
the other thing, as you know, is you find all this time. And whereas I was probably going out on a Saturday night and then getting up at 11 o'clock in the morning, I now get up at 5:30, 6 o'clock naturally without an alarm clock every day, and I find all these hours of the day to do stuff. And so I started a side business in this free time that I found. And that has enabled me to earn, you know, a lot of extra money.
Brilliant.
To pay off the debt. And I'm looking at paying my last payment next month. So
wow,
it's pretty Brilliant. Much done, you know, 32 grand worth of debt gone.
Wow. Amazing. How amazing.
Days, you know? Mm. But yeah, without being sober, there's no way I would have done that. There's no way I would have had the idea.
You wouldn't have, and you wouldn't have found the motivation to continue, I'm guessing, or had the energy.
That's it. It just dulls everything, and it dulls good ideas. It dulls, I think it actually does dull excitement because it
definitely steals your joy.
Yeah, it does.
And
you try and explain that to people sometimes, and they just cannot see past the initial.
No.
So-called relaxation.
And what about your relationships? How has it impacted on relationships with I don't know, your kids, with your family, with your friends?
Yeah, so I mean, my children, I've got miles more patience with my children. I've got two boys, 9 and 10 years old. They fight like 9 and 10 year olds do. And you know, two boys are hard work, but I would have never have sort of played football with them in the park or gone on fairgrounds and, you know, stuff like that. The basic stuff in life, really, which now I do all of that, and I've got plenty of energy to do it. But I've just got the patience is the other main thing. I've got patience with children, with my friends. You know, my dad's quite poorly at the moment, and you know, I don't know how I would have dealt with that whilst I was drinking. I don't think I'd have been able to function properly. No, it's just made the world a difference, and just the mental health, just the general well-being and belief that everything is possible, you know?
Yeah. And you said that, you know, when you were back in the pub and no one believed you, you know, when you said you were going to do this. What about those relationships with the guys you used to hang out with in the pub? Have any of those kind of friendships kind of drifted away or, you know, have they come along with you, as it were? What's been your experience there?
Well, when I did stop drinking, I made it my mission to continue going to the pub every night for a little while. I don't know why, because I think I just wanted to test myself. I think I wanted to get over the hurdles and the cravings quickly.
Yeah.
I don't recommend that to anyone, really. It was just something I did myself. So I continue to go to the pub, and I continue to have relationships with people I'd had in the past. But the problem is you soon get to see them relationships for what they really are. And they're very empty. They're drink related. They're not people I would normally sort of associate with now.
And also you get bored really quickly, don't you find?
You get bored.
Yes, I mean, with people.
That's right. And I sleep at the pub when we're allowed to go at the pub. Mm. Nowhere near as often, but I go up there, you know, maybe on a Friday night, and I'll go in there for an hour and a half. When I'm bored, I'll leave. It's just nice. It's a pleasurable thing to do. Go out and I'll sit up there with my pot of tea, like a right wally, but everyone thinks it's quite funny, and I think it's quite funny as well.
I mean, you know that there are a lot of people who actually choose, they don't stop drinking because of the fear of exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Because of the fear of the sober shamers and the social situations.
Yeah.
What would be your message to those people who are holding back because of that?
Oh, don't let the beer bullies win. No, it's, I think when anyone, tries to bully you into drinking or, you know, make fun of your sobriety, I think it just reflects totally on themselves.
It does, doesn't it?
You know, it's just a weakness they've got. And deep down, they're actually probably really jealous that you've done something about it. Because I don't think it's a hard thing to do, and it's a hard thing to accept. But if someone ever says anything to me, normally I try and talk about it now. And I'll say, you know, let's talk about your drinking. If you want to talk about my drinking, let's talk about your drinking. And 9 times out of 10, they will open up and admit they're not happy with their drinking, you know?
Yeah.
It's... you know, it's funny how some people are. They take a sort of an aggressive attitude to you and try and place the blame on you for not drinking. But really, it is their own problem.
Yeah. Totally. So what, I mean, you so far, you know, you've made it all sound like it's, you know, absolutely plain sailing, but what were the tough bits for you?
There was instances where we had sort of family engagements where I would normally have drank, and, you know, I was with my family, with my sister and my mum and dad and all the people that drink. And I remember going to one, actually. We had a meet up in Margate, and it was going to be a boozy weekend, which was booked way before I stopped drinking. And I did think about not going, did think about cancelling it. But again, it was one of these things where I thought, if I can get over this weekend without drinking, it's another, I don't know, bit of strength that I've gained. You know, it's another thing I've got through. But I do remember going to that do, and I did buy myself a pint of cider. I sat down at the pub table with it, and I just stared at it for about 2 hours. And
really?
I didn't drink it. I didn't even smell it. But that was the closest I got. And the only reason I got to that stage is I'd got myself into a right 2 and 8 about how I was going to explain to people that I'd stopped drinking.
Right.
When I look back at it now, it's just ridiculous that I got myself into that sort of mindset where I was just worried about what people were going to think. I didn't even want the drink.
Yeah, that's really interesting, isn't it? I mean, it is interesting when you first look at, when you're kind of presented with alcohol, or you pour, as you say, you pour it out because you think you're going to drink it, or somebody once handed me one by mistake in the early weeks. And it's really interesting because it's almost like it's got a different energy about it. Yeah. And you say you sort of looked at it for a couple of hours. I'd have loved to have heard your thought process. Yeah. You should have recorded all your thoughts, because I bet they were fascinating. I mean, I'm guessing you were in that moment kind of playing it forward and thinking, okay, well, I can drink this, which all it is goddamn liquid in a glass.
Yeah.
And suddenly that makes me okay in everyone else's eyes. But look what it changes in my life.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. It was, I knew it was, I'd done so well. I think I was on day 28 at the time then. I remember it. I was nearly a month. And I looked at it and I just thought, if I drink this one pint, this is going to turn into a complete U-turn.
Yeah.
Back to where I was within a week. And, you know, I've done the hard work. I've done the 4 weeks. I've beat the initial kick, got the stuff out of my system.
Yeah.
And, you know, like you say, play it forward. Is this really worth it?
Yeah.
And then that day, I set myself a target for 3 months. And it was just little targets at a time, three months, half a year, 500 days. And now I'm at 500 days. I don't really class myself as a drinker anymore. So I don't really see the point in setting another target, because for me, I just never know I'm never going to do it again. So,
yeah. Amazing. So were there any other times that you found particularly tough, apart from that social situation? Was there anything else for you that, you know, that any other kind of, I don't know, symptoms or anything else that you just want to flag up, just in case other people are, other people are going through it? And I remember in the early weeks, because I didn't tell anyone, I remember whenever sort of feelings or symptoms popped up for me, I just used to think, oh my God, is this normal to feel this crap? Because you hear people do often expect to feel amazing when they're 2 weeks, 3 weeks in.
Yeah.
And it's not quite that simple usually, is it?
No, it's not. And you do get the, is it the pause you've called it? Isn't it?
Yeah, PAWS, the post-acute withdrawal syndrome, isn't it?
That's right. And I got that. I had probably had a couple of bouts of that, to be honest, around about the 3 month mark. Maybe
it's kind of, for anyone who's not aware, it's kind of, you can often just feel a case of the blues, really. You can just feel really quite, maybe exhaustion and just a little bit down. I mean, let's face it, however bad pause is, it's never as bad as your worst drinking days, right?
Yeah, that's right. And the other thing was, you know, for people suffering that at the moment, it must be terrible, because obviously we've got a lockdown on, and there's not a lot you can do apart from walk around outside. So but I mean, at the time I had it, mine was sort of brought on, I think, by my dad was quite ill at the time. I was stressed, you know. I was stressed, and it did enter my mind to have a drink and just chill out, but again, you just played it forward in your mind, and I knew what was going to happen, where it was going to take me. And, you know, again, I go back to sort of just laying quiet somewhere and being still. And I don't think we do enough of that in general, you know, just just being still and sitting with your own thoughts and letting them flow over your head. So yeah, I mean, even now, like I say, when I get stressed, just go lie on my bed and just lay there and listen to the clock ticking or something. Do you know what
yeah.
I mean?
Yeah, it's just finding new ways, isn't it?
Yeah,
to kind of take yourself away from that fear and anxiety and stress.
That's right.
But in a healthy way.
Yeah, definitely.
Amazing. So tell us about the your I don't know if you call it a hobby or some other work that you do, which is songwriting, and tell us a bit about that.
Yeah, so I've always been a guitar player from a very young age, and you know, like other things with drinking, it sort of takes preference to all your hobbies and everything really. So I, you know, I've always had the guitar and I've always played it, but I never really took it that seriously until I stopped drinking. And it was funny because the night I describe at the pub when I gave up, that is what that song is about. It's about old men, you know, sitting on stools at the bar, slumped in their drinks, and that's exactly what it's about.
Right.
So yeah, it's been something that's filled my time quite a lot now, and I do write quite a few songs, and it's something I get real enjoyment out of.
So this is, you mentioned the song, this is Crooked Stones, which will...
Crooked Stools.
I'm so sorry, Crooked Stools. Okay,
yeah,
got it.
Yeah.
We'll play a little bit of that. And have you done any gigs and stuff then?
Yeah, so I love my open mic nights, again, because of the COVID situation. We can't do any of that at the moment, which is unfortunate. Yeah. But yeah, it's mostly open mics I do. I have played in bands previously, but I don't get the same enjoyment as I get from playing acoustic guitar and just singing sort of naturally.
Mm.
So yeah, I'm looking forward. That's the one thing I'm really looking forward to when the coronavirus is long gone, is getting back to playing out and about. Yeah.
Yeah, great. So how do you see the future for you then, John? And how different is your future going to be now to the one that you might have been rocketing towards?
I think the future for me is anything I want it to be now, and not be put off or you know, dulled down by alcohol, because this is the thing with alcohol, it just keeps you where you are.
Yeah.
And if at the best, it keeps you where they are. Mm. If anything, it takes you downwards.
Yeah.
But it does make anything possible. And when I see what I've achieved with giving up drinking, it just gives you so much self-confidence to try anything.
Yeah.
So, I mean, at the moment, I'm starting a new business, and that's going really well in what is a difficult time at the moment. Mm. And yeah, it's, I just want to do more of that, really. Just try new things and hopefully, you know, play more music and share that.
Yeah. And of course, it makes you, as you know, as we said earlier, much more present parent, doesn't it? You're much more present for your kids, which is, I mean, what an amazing gift to give to your kids. That's my only regret. So I didn't do it, you know, when my kids were younger, really, because it changes everything. And I mean, your boys will now, you know, yeah, they may decide to drink when they're older, but if they, you know, they will look at your behavior and there will be a sense of modeling that, you know, to a certain extent, won't they? I think that's amazing.
And that's what I did. I followed what my dad did.
Yeah.
And
of course,
you know, if they think that me drinking 10 pints down a pub is acceptable behavior, then they're just going to do the same.
Yeah.
So I don't want that.
What would your hope be then for, I don't know, just for the future generally? I mean, I know I often say, you know, I would love it to become as normal to choose not to drink as to choose to drink. Is that how you would see it? So that, you know, we still have pubs and we can still go into pubs, but it's not looked upon as in any way odd if you order an alcohol-free beer or a sparkling water?
Yeah, I think it's definitely changed now, Janie, to be honest. It's if I go into, you know, some of the pubs local to me, I'm amazed they've got like the Ghost Ship Zero.
Yeah, they have. That is, the beers are great, aren't they? Oh,
you know, and you think, and there is like a, you know, you go into a pub and ask for alcohol-free beer, there's quite a few choices now. And, you know, that's come in the last couple of years.
I mean, it has.
You know, when I had a pub, I think the only thing I sold was probably Calibre, and it's got to be the worst one, to be honest.
Yeah.
Might have to edit that out. Probably not allowed to say that. So it's definitely getting much better to drink alcohol-free options in pubs. And the more people that choose to drink alcohol-free, the more the pubs will have to sort of adapt to that trend.
Yeah.
Definitely going that way. It's definitely going that way.
That's great. John, thank you so much. I'm going to play a little bit of Crooked Stools then as we go out, and I wish you all loads and loads of success with your business and your music, and one day we'll come and see a gig. I tell you what, let's put an event on when we can do that. How amazing to do that again. And you can come and play live. That'd be dead cool. John, thank you so much. I really appreciate it. Thank you for sharing your story.
Yes, thank you very much, Janie. On Crooked Stools, past drunken souls, count on in misery.
John, we love it. We'll put the link to your stuff in the show notes. Just a reminder then that there is a chance to win that Sea Arch competition if you go to thesoberclub.com. Also, if you click on events there, you'll find details of our Bossing Your Sober Christmas event, which is Tuesday, 8th of December online. It is exclusively for Sober Club members. But if you don't want to join, but you did want to attend, drop me an email. Maybe you could pop a donation into our little give back. A Sober Club give back donation pot. What have we got coming up? I've got so many great guests coming up, and too many to even tell you about right now. I do just want to let you know that I do have a book coming out. I've mentioned it before, but it is available to pre-order. It's called Happy, Healthy, Sober: Ditch the Booze and Take Control of Your Life. And I'm super proud of it. It's not out till February, but if you pre-order, then that's really helpful because you get a bit more promo or something if you pre-order it on Amazon. Do have a look at that. Happy, Healthy, Sober on Amazon. And it's absolutely chock full of obviously all the stuff that I talk about. There is a kind of a 30-day challenge if you're new to ditching the booze, but then there's masses for you, whatever stage you're at, focusing on the lifestyle stuff, really, on the nutrition and the mindset. I've got some amazing experts as well who've contributed little sections and quotes for the book. So it's not just me. A little bit like the podcast, I've kind of brought you a wide range of experts to bring in their expertise on areas that are not necessarily, you know, my main areas of expertise. And I think it's great when you get a book like that that has that flavour in. And, you know, I've got people who are experts on nutrition and well-being. I've got an NLP expert and EFT, and then there's stuff on meditation and how you deal with stress, and there's creativity, and so there's a lot in there. I really hope that that you'll like it. So you can pre-order, as I say. It's called Happy, Healthy, Sober: Ditch the Booze and Take Control of Your Life. It's published by McNidder and Grace. No relation, by the way. Make sure you follow me on social media at Janie Lee Grace, and check out those the competition, as I mentioned, and all the various bits and bobs at thesoberclub.com. And I look forward to seeing you same time next week. Thank you for listening to the Alcohol Free Life podcast, brought to you by The Sober Club. Please rate and review. And if you want support, accountability and inspiration, and you want to live your best life without the booze, check out thesoberclub.com.